Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dax Xavier Josiah, the host of ACMG Presents Talk Time Live, the podcast. You want to catch up with all of our podcast shows and hear from some of the hottest names in all of anime, comics, movies, and games, such as...
This is Miley Flanagan, the voice of Naruto.
This is Stephanie Shea, the voice of Sailor Moon.
This is Ruben Langdon, the voice of Ken Masters and Dante from Devil May Cry.
Hey there, this is Kyle Abear, the voice of Ryu from Street Fighter V.
This is Chris Battle, character designer of Teen Titans Go.
Here's your chance to check out all of that and more on TalkTimeLive.com. TalkTimeLive.com provides all of our ACMG content with new and previous episodes, exclusive interviews, articles, and much more. Visit TalkTimeLive.com and let us help you learn to let go, live life, and love all things ACMG.
Talk Time Live!
Hey, what's happening? This is TC Carson, and you are listening to ACMG's Talk Time Live. And this is Kratos. Keep listening.
It's time for your Talk Time Live exclusive.
You are now about to witness the strength of geek knowledge.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, he said he was going to return, and he is here to talk about the hit Disney XD Marvel animated series that is Avengers Black Panther's Quest. He is none other than Jeffrey Thorne, the writer, producer, and showrunner, and we're just going to talk all Marvel and everything that's going on in the first half of this season. Jeff, how's it going? And welcome back, my friend. Happy holidays to you.
Thank you very much. We just got a gift of a great connection, so I'm happy. Everybody can hear everybody. It's glad to be here. I said I'd come back, and absolutely, let's talk about it, man. What'd you think?
Dude, oh, man, you know what? You guys did a great job. I was, you know, I've recently, in years, have respected the writing aspect of comics and movies and games and all sorts of things lately. I'm an artist at heart, so you know, the visuals has always been my thing. But and I now really matured to understand the marriage relationship of writing and animation or even illustration combined to tell a story.
Yeah. Well, it's a team. All these things are team efforts.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a couple of people sort of at the front of the team, you know, a couple of the producers, maybe the head writer, head director, because Jeff Allen is sort of the version of me that handled all the visuals.
Yes.
So like I had a room full of writers. He had a stable of directors. We would all get together and then discuss. And then we'd sort of break off into our squads. And then he would go handle his boys and I'd handle my boys and girls. And sort of we all throw it all back together and it makes a show.
It makes magic.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is I've been seeing a lot on Twitter where a lot of the illustrators have been, I don't know, their noses are a little bit out of joint because people not giving them credit or they don't feel they're getting enough creative credit for their contributions to the comics and stuff, which I agree. Like by the time no matter where the comic book idea starts, by the time it hits the shelves, the person who's visualizing it is helping to create that comic. It's co-creating that comic.
Right.
But it's fascinating to me because I've been around long enough where it never used to be like that for the writers, where the only people anyone wanted to talk to, I'm talking about like the Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Neil Adams,
Eric Larson,
John Byrne, Eric Larson, all of those guys, when they were coming up, nobody talked to the writers. Nobody cared about the writers.
They were the rock stars of the 90s, man. You know how
they were the rock stars. Like they would push a writer out of the way to get next to one of those guys, right? And so not that I thought that was fair either. Right. I think whatever happened with the British invasion, suddenly people started paying attention to Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman, Garth Ennis, Grant Morrison.
Dwayne
that
McDuffie.
Crowd came in. Yeah, exactly. And the absolutely, Dwayne. But I think during that era, which is sort of right after the sort of superstardom of the artist sort of peaked. People went, wait, I never read anything like this before. It isn't just the pictures.
Right.
So the pendulum swung towards the writer.
Yeah.
And I guess it swung way too far because I've felt from a lot of artists, people I've worked with, people that I just know who I haven't yet had the privilege of working with, that they feel kind of like, hey, I'm in here too, man. And I'm like, yes, you absolutely are in here too. I'm not trying to cut you out. I don't know who's trying to cut you out, you know, but the fans do that too. Like they sort of dictate, like if they want to, if Warren Ellis is on a comic book, it almost doesn't matter who's drawing it.
Yeah.
Right. But there are artists that it doesn't matter who's writing it. right?
There it's are people the Jim Lee. It's the Jim Lee.
Right.
In fact,
they're gonna show up for Jim Lee no matter who's right.
Let me tell you something. There is a saying. His name is just not just a brand, but it's a term too, because they now coined the phrase, I guess, variant cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was Jim Lee that, like, you would see the cover of Jim Lee, and this is in the 90s too, before that term variant ever came by.
Right.
And that's you would see this cover, or even Rob Liefeld, to his credit.
Yep.
You would see one of their covers, and you were like, oh, let me jump in this. You never look at inside of the book until you got home, and only to find out
funny.
That Jim Lee did nothing.
You didn't draw the book. Thanks, Jim. Jerk.
We coined the phrase Jim Lead. We got Jim Lee.
Yeah, you got Jim Lee. Absolutely. But on another level, though, somebody even put up a poll. Like, is there artists that you would just, it doesn't even matter what the book is. If you saw if that was the only way you could get that picture and you saw it on the cover of a book, would you drop money to buy that book just so you could have that art at your house, the cover art? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, there's still a handful of dudes like that. I don't care what the book is. If Jason Pearson's drawing the cover, I'm buying that book.
Agreed.
I probably will never read it, but I'm going to look at the book. Like, unless he's doing the interior art, I probably won't read it. But I guarantee you he's made a sale just off of that cover.
But also, credit to you, though, Jeff, because, I mean, when we first met in the first interview that we had, we had the solo discussion, and you convinced me, and I invested in the issues that you wrote.
And it's not bad, right?
It is not. I went way past the artwork, which is great, but the story, I invested in the story itself and the character development, and there lies my love for Solo now. So that is a much credit to you and your team.
Solo broke our heart. Poor little Solo. We love Solo. We love our little Solo.
I digress.
But nobody bought it.
What are you talking about? I brought it. I legit.
But I'm saying, like, 8 people bought that book. You're now number 9.
9.
So I'm going to call you number 9 from now on.
God.
Yeah. I mean, that's the rules of the game, right? You can put your all into something.
Yeah.
And I mean, the art on that book is fantastic.
Yeah.
Jerry Duggan asked me to come in and do it. He punched up the jokes, and I did most of the writing on that. Like, this is how cool Jerry is. We were going to split it 50-50. Mm-hmm. He's like, Jeff's writing this book. I'm just doing a joke punch up. I'm going to take 25, let Jeff have 75. I was like, I'm not asking you for that. I'm fine with 50-50. He's like, no, I'm doing 25% of the work. You're doing 75. You're going to take 75.
Awesome.
I was like, all right, cool. Damn. Like,
people out there like that, especially in that industry.
Take that to the bank, man. Jerry is one of the old school G's, for real.
But I digress. I mean, in reference to this season of, Black Panther's Quest, I mean, the story was really strong from start to finish. I mean, or half finished. And the Shadow Council, man, they came hard.
Yeah.
These guys.
Well,
every week was a different, discovery of who's in this group. You never know who. You didn't know who to trust.
Yep.
You know, Barry Zemo, damn it.
Yeah. Yeah, got you all, didn't I? Gotcha.
I was like, after all this, I was yay close to like, oh, dude, all right. They got Zemo on the team. This is a different take. Nope.
Well, let me put it to you like this, though. When we put Zemo in, we were like, we have to take pain. Doesn't really have to do with the larger story, but it's a good thing to talk about with writing, which is everybody knows Baron Zemo from the comics. If you know Baron Zemo from the comics, you're like, why are you trusting this?
The original Zemo at that, because this was next of kin.
Right. This is the son.
Yeah.
Right. This is Baron Zemo Jr.
Yeah.
But both Zemos are scum of the earth. Like, the first Zemo is a Nazi, and Zemo Jr. is not much better than that.
Tradition.
But you got to, you stick with your family. You got to stick with your family. But we were like, we want to do this. So if we're going to do this, we can't just shine it on and have Black Panther go, okay, I trust him. He's a good guy. Forget all that other stuff.
Right.
We got to have people in the show. Other people in the show, like, are you crazy? This is Baron Zemo, right? And if the person saying that is Captain America,
right?
You know, that's like Superman saying, "Are you crazy? That's Lex Luthor, man.
Yeah, exactly.
What's wrong with you?" You know, no, we got this, And we took great pains to show that Zemo, apparently, at least up until the mid-season break, I mean, he had an opportunity to take the thing that everybody wanted. He had an opportunity to hurt people he'd always wanted to hurt. Yeah, we gave him every opportunity to be a villain, to show his true colors. And every single time, no matter who was there, even if he looked like he was alone, right?
Yeah.
He behaved well. He behaved like a good guy, right? And we threw in a couple of lines here and there where if you look back on it, you're like, wait a minute, that's not what he meant. I thought that's what he meant, but now I see what he was really talking about, right? But because one of the things that somebody said to us about that was, I can't believe you got me with Zemo. And we were like, Zemo did not lie one time in that entire thing.
Very true.
He told you the whole truth the whole time. It's just he – well, rephrase that. He told you most of the truth the whole time, right? He didn't tell you the whole truth because that would have been the whole plan.
Well, he told you the truth. He just didn't tell you the real.
Right. He told you right. He didn't tell you the real truth. He told you the truth.
Right.
Right. So when he says, I don't want to be under my father's shadow, check. Mm-hmm. Right. My father was this, but he wasn't very bright. Check. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, all of those things. No, I'm with this dude. You can trust me to do what I said I was going to do. Check. Right. It wasn't until the very last instant when he finally got his hands on the prize, the actual prize, not the key to the prize.
Right.
Right. Not Captain America's shield. Mm-hmm. Right. The prize. Once he got his hands on
that, which was the crown.
Exactly. He tells everybody, I'm Baron Zemo. Are all of you stupid? I'm Baron Zemo. Right. And yeah, we're all kind of stupid. We all fell for it. Everybody in the room fell for it. Even the bad guys fell for it.
Right. Wow. Hand is raised over here. So
yeah. So, I mean.
Well, not only just Zemo, because he had White Wolf, who was also doing his thing in some part of the season.
Poor guy.
Yeah. And I'm not even going to make predictions. At all, I'm just gonna let it ride as far as his character is concerned. But also T'Challa himself, to some extent, because I felt like y'all had him developed as a in the gray character somewhat throughout this.
Yep. That's very much the point.
We seen it for our perspective of what he was doing. They couldn't, so we know what he's really doing. But from their perspective, we're looking at the fourth wall. From their perspective, they thinking he's just like they're vilifying him.
Yeah, he just went buck wild from their point of view. Like,
he claims he had his reasons. We're still, you know, discussing whether those reasons have merit.
Exactly.
You know, why didn't he want to really trust, if anybody, Captain America especially? Well, Captain America was, in this case, Captain America was his only alibi, unfortunately. That alibi is to be determined at this time.
Right. So, well, the one guy who could have got you out of this, sadly, well, he's gone now.
It's awesome because now you got the one person that T'Challa doesn't want to trust, and that's Tony Stark, of course, and Hawkeye. Right.
Well, I mean, it's worse. You saw that ending. I mean, everything he said, that was not part of some big, larger plan. He's just telling you, here's what it is now.
Yeah.
Like, we needed him to get there, basically. We needed to put him through all of that to get him to that point.
Yeah.
So that when he said that, you're like, yeah, I guess he would feel like that, you know. There's a couple of things I wanted to do myself coming in. There's several things I want to do, but just for what we're talking about now, you're talking about the Shadow Council. One of the things that has always bugged me about the Black Panther, he never really had his own villains, right? It was always part of the Avengers team, or some of the villains would pop up like M'Baku, Killmonger. Everybody can say those guys.
Right.
But when you start fleshing it out, he doesn't even have as good a set of people that are after him as the Flash.
Well, that's an interesting question before you even continue that, because I feel like he's one. Miles Morales, even though he's new and fresh, he's another one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's maybe a few others. Some of the champions.
Yeah, that's true.
You
need good antagonists.
Absolutely. I always say that. You can't have a good protagonist without a fantastic antagonist to play off of in this case.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. And my feeling about that too is, and other people will disagree, not every writer feels this way, obviously. Mm-hmm. But for me, I feel like the villain should be better than the hero. I feel like in a straight up one-to-one fight, if they were both naked fighting on a beach, Killmonger beats Black Panther's ass.
Which did happen.
Right? But here's the thing. That's why it's fun to watch the hero win.
Adversity.
Because the hero should have to struggle just a little bit, have to go from A to A plus in order to win.
Absolutely.
Right? You got to watch the hero get defeated, get knocked down, lose a few battles. And then when he finally or she finally does win, you're with them. You went through all that with them.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of, well, my guy, I read so many commentaries. Well, he has this in the arsenal. He had this in the arsenal. Why didn't he just do this? And I'm like, so what? You want a 2-minute cartoon?
Yeah.
You want a 1-page comic book? You want to pay $5 for a 1-page comic book? Because I guarantee you, Marvel would love to charge you $5 for one page. Okay. Is that what we all want? Because I'll run up to the editors right now. Make my life easy.
Right.
Established villain. Hero shows up, beats up villain, kisses the girl. That's one page. Right. So we wanted to do, and also I shouldn't say just we. When I say we, there's a lot I couldn't talk about at the beginning, but Marvel, because they're all very tight-lipped over there, all crazy.
Yeah, of course.
But it was their decision to turn the show into what it got turned into. Like, they brought in a person like me because they already had decided we want to take a left turn.
Yeah.
Right? We've been doing it a particular way. We're going to try something else. Let's try something else. Bring in this dude. Let's go.
Right.
And so we spent a good deal of time asking them, how far can we go? Are we allowed to do this? If we did this, would that be okay? Can we kill Captain America? Right. They're like, yeah, do you think? Do you think? Right? I mean, it wasn't that sort of offhand either. They're like, why do you think we brought you in? Yes. We'll tell you when to stop, is what their basic attitude was. So we got to set up the Shadow Council. We didn't have real contact with the movie, so we didn't know how they were playing Killmonger.
Right.
And we had literally no information. What we knew was what the public knew. Obviously, everybody knew he was in it, but we didn't know what version that they were going to use.
Yeah.
Right? So I was like, all right, well, let's do it like this, because we need to have the villain a clean motivation, right? And also, remember, even though it's now for all the whole family includes young kids. So it has to be a relationship and a motivation that like a 7-year-old can go, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Right? Correct. He's mad because of that. Right? Whereas, and also that whole thing in the movie where, now these are great things for movies, by the way. I love that movie. But they could do a lot of stuff that was more adult, right? The whole way that Killmonger comes into being with the
political aspect, especially.
All of that stuff and where his family was and how his dad was all set up, all that stuff. There's just no way we're going to squeeze that into 22 minutes in a cartoon on Disney Channel.
Absolutely.
This is not going to happen. Right. Even if we wanted to, if we'd known all of that, which we didn't, but even if we had, there's just no way any of that was going to fit. It's just too big.
Right.
Right. So we had to come up with all these alternative reasons for why people did stuff. We didn't think of them as alternative. We thought of Killmonger as just, well, we know what he is in the comics and we're not doing that. So what are we going to do? Because we got to use him as a villain. And this is what we came up with. And he's got this whole thing, which will be much more – you'll see much more of what his real agenda is in the second half of the season. But he forms the Shadow Council. He reforms the Shadow Council.
Right.
He assembles this – you watch him assembling his team of people. And some of them are already villains, like Xanda and M'Baku show up and they're just villains. Already a villain.
Kraven.
Right? And then Kraven is not part of the Shadow Council. He's just a hired gun.
Oh, he really was just a hired – okay.
He was a straight-up hired gun. And that's another thing. He will also use other people. Like Claw technically should be a hired gun, but we love Claw, so he's part of the Shadow Council.
I was really upset when he actually died in the movie, by the way. So I'm glad he's on the
show. I know. Why would you kill that character so early?
He was so like, enjoyable.
What? Yeah, although I got to fix it. If they want to bring him back, I can fix it. So whatever.
Unfortunately.
They don't care about But, but yeah, so one of the big things we came in with was he needs a formidable enemies and people that, you know, it's not always going to be me running the show. It's not always going to be me writing the show. We need to have enough people that when we all walk away from it, if they ever want to come back to this, they got a set of villains that aren't just Wakandans, right? That it's not always about Wakanda all the damn time.
Right.
Even if they come from nearby in Africa, like Xanda, that you can take him all over the world. He's by the end of this season, the Black Panther will have pissed off a great many people.
Right.
So he's going to have, it gives him a richer possible set of adventures to have.
Yeah.
Right. So, and it was really fun. Like, I don't really like the character of M'Baku from the comics. I never have.
Well,
every black writer who's got on him has tried to fix him in their own way.
That's one of my questions that I wanted to ask you about. And that his character very interesting and noticeably significant, if you will,
mm-hmm.
because of the design of him.
Yep.
And that's my question, because the traditional version of him, even dating back to the original Avengers, Mightiest Heroes, they went to the gorilla outfit, but you guys decided to go a different route with a exosuit of some sort. Was that your decision?
That was me. No, there will never be. I will never write on the show where a man shows up in a gorilla suit.
Right.
A black man ain't showing up in a gorilla suit on the Death Punch.
When I saw that, I was like,
nope.
I immediately wrote that, like, way back in September, I think when we first talked about it, and we saw the first few episodes, and it came. Then that episode came up. I was like, I'm writing this question down right now.
Yep. Nope. There's no way in hell that was happening ever. No chance. No way.
All right, talk about that. Go about that discussion, because I'm really interested about that. Because
here's the thing.
Yeah.
Marvel was really I cannot express how cool they were with all of this stuff. They were like, look, this is the animated version of the universe. Okay. So if you want to modify a character to make him fit the story better or to jack it, look at Tiger Shark. Tiger Shark isn't even an Atlantean in the comics. He's an enhanced human being.
Right.
Right. He got stuff done to him to make him able to work underwater. Yeah. We threw all that out. He's just a rough Atlantean dude.
Right.
Same thing with Xander.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to honor was the Christopher Priest version of the Black Panther, the Reg Hudlin version of the Black Panther, the Stan Lee and Jack Kirby version of the Black Panther, and the just Jack Kirby version of the Black Panther.
Right.
So Xander comes from the just Jack Kirby Black Panther, and she's nothing like she is in the comics. I mean, some of her personality is a little bit the same, but our Xander has superpowers. The one in the comics does not. Right. That whole fixation on Black Panther. Did they ever date? We don't know. Xander's a little crazy.
Right.
That could all just be in her head. We don't know. Right. But we wanted him to have formidable enemies that when somebody threw a punch at him, he would feel it. Right. And Xander has more. Somebody was talking about this on the web. They're like, oh, it's great. She's a shapeshifter. And I'm like, she's a little more than a shapeshifter, dude. And they're like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, she grabbed the Black Panther in midair and threw him over her head with one hand. Okay, so if she hits him, he's gonna feel it.
Right.
That's not a weak person who can just fight and change shape. Right. She can go with the big dogs. She can punch you, you're gonna feel it.
Right.
Right. In the armor. Right. So we gave that plus a black woman, and that was how many black women in that kind of a supervillain role have you ever seen in your life? None. Right. And she's so that was that. With M'Baku. I wanted him to have some sort of a force field power enhancing suit to put him up in Hulk class. This is back when we didn't know if we were going to use the Hulk or not in the show.
Right.
So I wanted it just in case we had somebody to run into the Hulk. I wanted M'Baku to punch the Hulk and have him feel it.
Every team should have a big guy in a group.
Everybody needs a tank, right? But but by the time we got to the actual show, Tiger Shark is kind of the tank.
Right.
So we did that. Also, the whole thing with Atlantis. And we wanted to fill in some background in our universe. Atlantis and Wakanda have had a very sort of tense relationship for centuries, right? So when he and Tiger Shark meet, the dialogue between them is not just, oh, another supervillain. It's like, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be up here.
You're right.
We got a deal, right? So all of the conversation between Black Panther and Atuma gives you history. Like, Atuma was used to dealing with Black Panther's dad, but he's out of the picture now, and he doesn't really respect T'Challa.
Right.
Right? So all that stuff looks like it's just throwaway lines, but it isn't, because Marvel wanted us to do a show that was more complex than what they had been doing before, on their decision, right? The way it was before was their choice, and the way it is now is their choice.
Right.
Right? So, but from my point of view as a writer, that was like this, like, okay, well, let's crack our knuckles, kids. Let's see what we can throw in here.
Right.
Right? Let's go for the fence, and if they pull us back, great. So we got the Shadow Council. My Madam Mask. I love my Madam Mask.
Well, yeah, exactly. And by the way, when I tweeted you about that, the minute I saw the episode, the minute I heard that voice, I was very happy and surprised to hear when Everett reprising that
role. When it's all about when Everett.
I loved her, Agent Carter, when she played that role.
She's so great.
Awesome.
She's so absolutely great.Ya is so great.
You couldn't have found a better person. And you know what I loved about that, which went to casting of that? To me, it paid a lot of respect to the Agent Carter series.
Yeah.
We
love that show.
By grabbing her. It was a show that should have never.
I agree.
Open-endedly
finished.
That show
should still be on the air. No,
or at least the book should have been closed properly where we should have let her found
something.
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, something. We should have got to the end of the story. No, dude, that's a whole show by itself.
Yeah.
This Agent Carter, that's a whole show by itself. Like, I could go off on Agent Carter for years. I love that show. I love that show. I know some of the writers on it. Mm-hmm. Actually, Brandon Easton, one of my writers, was a writer on that. And we just, I had written for Wynn in the previous season. Ironically, she had played Whitney Frost in my Halloween episode from the previous season. So when we started putting the team of the whatchamacallit, of the Shadow Council together, me and Harrison Wilcox, my executive, because it was just me and him at the very beginning. Like, well, what about Madame Mask? I'm like, you want to make her Madame Mask? Because she wasn't Madame Mask yet. Let's make her Madame Mask in this.
Yeah.
Right? All right, cool. So, I mean, it was literally like two geeks in a comic book shop going, all right, well, what can we do? Well, what are they going to let us do? Let's try something. Right? Let me do this. Oh, they didn't say anything to that. Let's try this other thing. Right? Like, it was great. So the Shadow Council turns out to be somewhat formidable. Even Claw with the sonic cannon on his arm. He's kind of a jokey villain, but hey, he came to play. He hurt people.
Right.
So we got a team, and the best thing about it was they're not a team set up to fight the Avengers. Their team set up to fight the Black Panther by himself.
Right, exactly. which always makes Black Panther a lot more valuable when you have a big rogue gallery coming at you like that.
Yeah, right. And also they all have their own agendas,
right?
They're not a team like we're all from this one country, so we're going to do this because of our country, or we all hate you because you're mutants. So it's not like that. They got together because they have a common goal, but they have all, each of them, their own agendas.
And once that goal hits, they're going, it's all for self.
Right. All bets are off after we get where we're going, right? You all know I'm going to be shooting all you in about 5 minutes,
I do have a question in regards to the Shadow Council, though. Is this all of them that... Are they all in formation now? Or are they expecting?
It's hard for me to describe the Shadow Council without giving away anything. I will say about them is this. This is the current version of the Shadow Council. There has been a Shadow Council of some form off and on for quite a while. So theoretically, the ones you've seen are not all there are.
Right.
But
perfect.
The ones that you've seen so far are the prime ones, right?
Right.
I don't want to spoil the second half. There's a lot of stuff going on with the Shadow. It looks like the Shadow Council's over from that fight.
Right.
There's a whole lot more to that story going on, too. None of the stories ended. Let's put it like that.
Right. Well, along with...
Except Zemo.
Except Zemo, of course. Right.
Zemo is dead, y'all. Zemo is dead. Dead.
Well, along with Wynn Everett, of course. I mean, we talked about it before, Mark Hamill and, you know, Stan Lee, which we'll talk about shortly. About that. Can you talk about some of the other guests that have made it in the first season that we didn't know about?
In the first season.
In
the first half of the first season. Who can I say?
I know Troy Baker's voice by now. He was Hawkeye.
Absolutely. The first half doesn't have a lot of that. We have a lot of luminaries like David Kaye plays Zemo.
Right.
If you know voiceover work, then yeah, you're going to be like, yeah, I know that guy. But he's played Zemo for them before. We got some big voiceover stars in there.
Well, I always try to see if some of the cast members are people that I've actually interviewed before or met personally.
Gray Griffin
was probably the only one so far that I've actually have met personally.
She's awesome.
I tell you, man, when she was in Philly and I was with her and Molly Flanagan and they were so entertaining. We went out
Gray's
to dinner
awesome.
That night and they were so much fun. And the kid side of me was like, I am actually having dinner with Captain Marvel and Catwoman right now. This is awesome.
Let me tell you, whenever Gray shows up, as soon as I see her, I just go, Azula! And she's like, Stop saying that. You're giving me crazy now. Right? But that's she's my Azula for life, man. Azula, it's all about Azula.
Be awesome.
But yeah, so the first half of the season is very much the we don't do much stunt casting, right? If I don't call it stunt casting to get great voice actors who have long track records to come in and just do their absolute best. All of our Avengers are the same Avengers from the previous season.
Absolutely.
But
it deserves all the credit in the world, by the way.
Yeah, those guys, they are – I feel like it's my job to give them good things to do. Yeah. Let me put it like that. They're whole much – not necessarily on these shows for the Marvel shows, but in general, so much of a voice actor's career is playing, you know, childlike characters, childish characters, not very thin in terms of what their motivations are, no character development,
right.
None of that kind of stuff, unless you get a show like Avatar The Last Airbender or some of the Justice League Unlimited stuff.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, these shows don't develop you, right? Yeah. It's nobody's fault. It's just the way the nature of the beast was. But this particular year, Marvel was like, go for what you know. So for these actors, I was able to give a lot of the more nuances to their characters, character arcs, right? Not everybody, because they don't all show up enough. Right. Like they're not all in every episode enough. But yeah, it was those guys. I love those guys. Those are
part of the reason why I enjoy having such great talent like that on the show is because, one, people need to know more about these guys and how really talented that they are. And sometimes I don't think that people give them enough credit because they're not the Mark Hamills or they're not
I'll go out on a limb and tell you point blank they don't get enough credit.
Yeah.
Gray is a good example. There's a guy who didn't work with us. Everybody just calls Bowser.
Yeah.
Some of those guys, all of them are great actors.
Yeah.
Let's just start.
And first of all,
there.
They're actors. They're not voice actors.
Right.
I've disowned the term voice acting completely.
But within them all being really good at their jobs.
Yeah.
Some of them are like man or woman of 1,000 voices.
Absolutely.
Right. And you'll feel like there's 4 people in a room and there's only one.
Absolutely. I've had some really great people on this show that are like Mel Blanc level.
Yeah, exactly. So they hit me to that. And also the one best thing to me about all of it was they are comrades.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Roger Craig Smith is my Captain America. He's going to be my Captain America for life.
Right.
Right. But when they work together, one, they've been working together a long time, a lot of them. Two, they work together on other projects a lot over and over again. But also, there's none of that sort of, they just don't have that vibe of being snipey at each other and trying to undercut each other. Right. They're just like, they made me want to be an actor again. That working with all those actors for that season, I quit acting in 2000, a little bit before the year 2000. I have not looked back since then until then. Just seeing how they were together, watching them play with each other, how decent they were to each other, and how much they came to give to the parts.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you gave them a little, if you gave them an inch, they'd take a mile and just be, oh wow. Right? Like it was great, man. Like,
oh no, I totally absolutely understand it. And like I said, because I've spent time, like intimate time with them, I see the chemistry and the camaraderie and the unity.
Yeah.
The guild like unity that they have. It's awesome.
No, they made me humble. I was really just so thrilled with all of them.
And I love it, especially when a lot of the actors had the swag after strike for the video games.
Yeah.
A while back, they came so strong together as a unit. And they will not lie to you at all about anything.
No, they're great. They're great. They are great. Great, 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 great.
Yeah, and Ritter Horvitz was the other one that was with us that night as well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, so I can't spoil anything. There's the second half of the season is a bit more has a bit more of that, what you're describing in it.
Yeah.
But again, not for the stunt part, just for the part.
Right. Absolutely. But nonetheless, let's talk about it. I've spoken to you, in September?
Yeah.
Since then, we had the biggest news ever in the passing of one of the biggest icons in America, you know, history.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your thoughts on the passing of Stan Lee and how much he meant to you and, you know?
Well, okay, two things. I don't think it's given anything away because Marvel showed that he and Mark Hamill are both going to be in the show at some point.
Correct.
Working with Stan, meeting Stan. I never met Stan before. I've been at convention and stuff where I've seen him talk, but I've never met him.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with him for one day. Yeah. Like he was there, he did his bit, he was cool, he was smart, funny, just how you expect Stan Lee to be, but not in a fake way, just like just that guy you expect him to be.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, I would say part of the reason I'm a writer is Stan and Jack.
Yeah.
Just like part of the reason I'm a writer is Rod Serling. part of the reason I'm a writer is Gene Roddenberry uh-huh. and his crew. In the same way, very specifically Marvel Comics and the early Marvel Comics. When I started reading comics, Stan and Jack were still both in the game.
Yeah.
Right. Even though he was running the company, but he was still writing books and stuff. I think I discovered comics consciously discovered comics probably in the late 70s. Right. So I'm like 8 years old, something like that. Those guys, Stan was still a presence, and his feeling was felt throughout all those books. And growing up, I have all the, like, kids probably don't even realize he wrote books about the origin, how he started Marvel Comics. Origin of Marvel Comics, Son of Origin of Marvel Comics, mm-hmm. the superhero women, Bring on the Bad Guys. This was all him talking about, here's how we came up with stuff, here's what we did, right. here's why this thing means that, all that. And so meeting him, I had to keep reminding myself, you are here to work.
Right.
You can't just like geek out and fanboy all over this man.
Right.
Although he deserves it.
Right.
I mean, my feeling about this is the same way I felt with Jim Henson, and the same way I felt with Dwayne McDuffie, yeah. which is there's a lot of people. Stan was an old man, so he had a long life of history of ups and downs, and some people liked him and some people didn't, and maybe right. he could have played this better, maybe he could have played that worse, you know. But at the end of the day, he came into the world, he put something so beautiful and benign and uplifting mm-hmm. and life-changing for so many human beings around this planet, that he made a mark on this planet, on this culture, that I really don't think can be overstated, right? Absolutely. There are so many people who are – the world is better for him having been in it. Absolutely. So if you can say that about yourself, if you're walking out the door and like, well, the room's better because this guy walked through it, that's pretty much the best any human being is going to ever get.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. And the other thing about Stan's passing, I guess, how do I say this? He lived a long life. When he started in comics were just something kids bought for 5 cents.
Right.
For 5 cents. Fold them up in your back pocket. Hit, kill flies with him, mm-hmm. you know. He lived long enough to see things that he made up in an office with two other dudes in their 20s turn into a multi-billion-dollar segment Absolutely. Of an industry, making the biggest studio entertainment company in the world the biggest in the world.
Absolutely.
Right? Which means, by definition, the biggest ever. Can you imagine if you came up with Spider-Man in your back room, and now there are so many versions of Spider-Man that people can actually have an argument about which one is best. It's Miles Morales, by the way, if you haven't seen
I'm not going to deny. I'm not
to the Spider-Verse, it's Miles Morales. Okay.
That movie has proven that wholeheartedly, trust me.
Oh, my God, that movie.
Oh, we'll honor that. We'll honor that and talk about that at the end.
So from Stan's point of view, it's almost like a person who always wished they could fly, living long enough to see people build a colony on the moon.
Wow.
Right? So I'd say bow your heads. A great man is passing. That's what I say about Stanley. I'm not an old friend of his. I only met him personally for one day. But he had a gigantic – he personally had a gigantic effect on my life.
Right.
So I will always honor that.
Now, as a person who also only met him for one day at a con for like one spot, he was literally like – I'm looking at my picture right now, like just inches away from me. Did you have this presence? And I call him the comic book Pope for a reason. Did he have this presence upon him that it just felt like evangelic?
No, I would say this. And Mark Hamill's the same way. And it broke my heart for both of them in some ways.
Yeah.
You notice that there will be no pictures of me hanging out with – there may be one picture because they forced me to do it. Mm-hmm. Everyone was like, let's take pictures with Mark. And I was like, I don't want to take – let Mark go. Mark's mm-hmm. cool. He did his bit. He's a nice man. Mm-hmm. Let him finish. They're like, oh, Jeff, don't be silly, right? So whatever. There may be one picture of me like hugging Mark Hamill mm-hmm. somewhere in the world. There are no pictures of me hugging Stan Lee, mm-hmm. okay? Stan, in that day of working, was a guy. But – when he was asked to turn it on, so to speak, mm-hmm. like, okay, you're going to have an interview. It's going to be you and Mark Hamill. Let's go. You could almost watch a little switch flick in his head. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, they want this version.
Yep.
Right. Personally, I prefer the version where the light is not on.
Right.
But the version, seeing both versions in a day, it's kind of cool because he's awesome. In charge of both versions.
Right.
Yeah. So I would say I saw it, but I didn't experience it. I think that's for the audience.
Agreed.
Right? And we were all backstage, so he didn't feel a need, I don't think, to project that at us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's not to say, though, everybody running around him was still treating him like the Dalai Lama. So I'm not kidding. So how much work do you have to do if you're actually the Dalai Lama and everyone treat you like the Dalai Lama? You don't have to put on your shirt that says, hey, dig me, I'm the Dalai Lama. Right?
I ain't mad at his swag, though.
Yeah. Oh, my God. No, Stan's a G. Stan's OG. Yeah. Stan's OG.
But what he's meant to this world, I mean, like you said, like what he's meant to – what he's done for society – and Al Sharpton, I think, really pointed best when talking about him and how much he changed the ideology almost of certain different demographics, if you will.
Yes, I agree.
And
how to
accept certain other demographics.
Yep. Yeah. Well, what did he say? Anyone can wear the mask.
Yeah.
He said that. He actually said that. Anyone can wear the mask.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, we're going to talk about that movie. Stop it.
I know. Well, I mean, dude, but, I'm about to go see that. I've seen that movie already. I saw it Thursday night at the first show, just so I would not have to do a crowds or whatever. I'll be seeing that for the rest. I'll probably see that movie once a week till it's gone.
I'm not hating on you.
Oh, my God. I love that movie.
One more question in the Stan Lee conversation, because there lies... When that situation occurred, you know, and I consider his passing a form of celebration for all the life that he's lived. When you live that long and you are able to do the things that you do, you don't mourn. I don't believe in mourning for a life.
No,
like
you
that.
Celebrate.
You celebrate the life because he gave back.
Yep.
Unfortunately, people like Bill Maher didn't understand this. And he came up with this insanely stupid, idiotic. I'm surprised. And I know he's done stupid things before, but he normally does his homework about things. So he wrote this blog, and I don't know if you heard about it or seen it.
Yeah, I heard about it.
And I've read it, and it was just – I was very surprised at that. Have you gotten a chance to ever read that or
humor
that? What were
your
thoughts about
it? It made me angry. I wrote a really long thing that I did not ultimately post anywhere because I was like, what's this going to help?
Right.
I'll say this. There's a lot of people in the world who have hearts that need opening.
Yeah.
I don't know how anyone could look at the stuff that Stan and Jack and Steve and John and Marie and Walt and John again mm-hmm. and Sal and all those people who made these things, Chris and Dave, all those mm-hmm. people whose names we know from their first names, our intimate friends who made these comments. Mm-hmm. All they did was put something benign into the world. Yeah. Be good to each other. Be sweet to each other. Be just. Be tolerance. Honorable. Right. Sacrifice, tolerate. Right. There is such a thing as being a good person in the world. It isn't weak to be that. It isn't wimpy or stupid or dull-witted to try and be an honorable human being in the world. Right. And yeah, you're going to get punched every once in a while. You're going to get knocked in your ass every once in a while. Sometimes you're going to lose. Right. I mean, Spider-Man is a perfect example of that. How many people has he loved that have died in that comic while he's trying to save them?
Or him struggling to pay bills, or him having girl trouble,
you know. But I'm saying, like, the big sacrifices, right, that the struggle is worth it because it's worth it is the primary message of comics.
Right.
The thing must be opposed. Evil must be opposed, mm-hmm. right? There are a lot of people in the world who cannot bite down on that,
right?
They can't. They look at it as naive to think that way. They feel like they're always trying to pull up the skirt and see if you got a gun under there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's like, no, it's just a skirt. How can you live your life like this? You got to have a weapon. Right. No, I'm just trying to be cool, man. You know, like that. I have pity for such people.
Right.
So it made me angry because he's talking about my family in a way.
Yeah.
But when I calmed down about it, I thought how sad and how empty your heart must be to look at all this lovely stuff. And the only thing you can get out of it is, what a waste of time. Why does anyone care about this? This is all stupid. Like, really? It's all stupid? You poor, broken human being.
I took it in that perspective as well, but in a different sense. And in somewhat of an ironic sense, because here you got a guy who claims to be a super liberal who is apparently doing the one thing that he hated the most, is being the guy that he's fought against for the past, and like God knows how long, 2 years now. And he's doing he did exactly the same thing that our beloved president has done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, don't understand why he didn't realize this.
I don't know. I mean, the world likes to think this is some big clubhouse out here and everybody knows everybody personally. And we're all going to the same parties and we all have people in common and stuff. But the reality is Hollywood's a factory town. Right. And there's a lot of different factories in it, a lot of little startup companies in it. But we're not all connected. So when you look at a person like that, I'm looking at him like you're looking at him. I'm like, I just don't know how you got this way, dude. Like, you could have said nothing, right?
I mean, I'm sure he's probably...
You could have literally said nothing at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right?
Why sit on a guy's death? I mean, it just felt... Reading it, it just came off so bitter. It was just like...
Small.
Like, it was very... He was displacing anger upon somebody
for no reason.
With no reason.
And there was nothing. There was like... There was a perfect opportunity to absolutely be quiet.
Right. Yeah,
right.
It was just like, wow, where did this come from? I'm like, I know he invested in a lot of campaigns and those, you know,
whatever,
they didn't come up the way he wanted. So whatever. Maybe he's a little bit bitter over the years of doing, you know, political television.
No, I think it was just mean spirited. I don't think there's any way around it. I think a man dies and your epitaph for him is either your silence if you didn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or praise if you did. But there's no reason to kick him. He might have family around.
Even Larry
King. And he left
King.
A mark on the world. Right.
Even Larry King interviewed him, and you could tell, you can hear the, you know, the context in Larry King's voice of when he mentioned, you know, he wanted to talk about the Stanley situation, because he met Stanley. He's interviewed Stanley. He knows how nice of a guy he
is.
And, you know, he was like, if you would have got a chance to meet him, you would have really liked him. And even his answer to Larry King was not, there was no merit to it. No.
Well, like I say, all the people we like aren't necessarily I just don't know. I don't know why a person needs to be like that. I don't know what you get out of being that person in the world.
I feel like trying to beat him at this point.
I just don't understand it. I don't understand how you see all these people sort of mourning and celebrating and leaving flowers and living their little testimonials about how this affected. There's literally people walking around with Spider-Man tattooed on their body.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you ask them, why do you have Spider-Man's mask tattooed on your body? They will tell you a story about why that character means something to them.
Right.
How it got them through something. Right? Something real.
Right.
And then the person who created that is just like two Jewish dudes. Two street-level Jewish dudes in an office in New York saying, oh, well, you know, D.C. owns the market. What are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to think about them like they're real people.
Yeah.
Right? D.C. was – when you thought about comics, when they started, when they took over Timely and turned it into Marvel, D.C. was what people thought of when they thought about comic books. When they thought about superheroes, they thought about Superman, Batman. And these three guys, these four guys and a couple of ladies – right, so let's say five people, three guys and two ladies, right? They changed the world in a good way,
mm-hmm.
right? Not in a way that hurts anyone,
right?
And in many ways, in a way that uplifts.
And
so
brought opportunity and represent. I think, and many, it's not even an opinion; it's fact. He brought more opportunity and representation to so many different. Ideologies, cultures, communities.
That's right.
I mean, for God's sakes, you're doing a Black Panther.
I mean,
TV series.
Thing in the world is to be sitting in a room, and I'm guaranteeing you, everybody, not everybody who makes animation is necessarily a comic book fan,
right?
And not everyone who's a comic book fan is a fan of superheroes,
right?
Right, but I guarantee you, there's nobody in anybody in the animation industry who Stan Lee's life did not touch in a positive way.
Right.
Right. No, even I would guess he probably had enemies because he was in business for so long. I guarantee he had enemies somewhere.
Yeah.
But I'm also guaranteeing you, even his enemies had their lives touched positively in some way by Stan Lee.
Absolutely.
Or his work. Right. And that's just how can you look at that mark left on the world and not applaud it? Right.
I just really hope that maybe he'll retract his. You know,
I doubt it.
Yeah, and so do I. But just wishful thinking.
I look at that as a sign of a person whose heart has been broken too many times.
I agree. I extremely concur with that. But let's move on to more positive situations. I mean, we can't get out of here without talking about it. What did you think of Enter the Spider-Verse, man?
Dude, holy crap.
Did you have any clue or idea that we were going to see what we saw?
Well, here's the thing. No, first of all, because they did so much amazing new stuff,
yeah.
Right? They like, what did they say their motto was? Peter just posted up on his Twitter. Our motto was, if it ain't broke, break it. Like, we're gonna be doing some new stuff even if we don't need to.
Right.
Because there's a lot of tried and true techniques they could use. And they're like, nope, we don't care. I don't care if they've been doing it perfectly and looks great. No, we're going to do it this way.
Right.
Just to do it this way. Right? And I was like, okay. But no, honestly, the phrase, anyone can wear the mask, that is everything. And the other idea that this was a group of people, like there's one primary director and two sort of secondary directors on this project, mm-hmm. a team of an interracial, intercultural, intergender, just like a squad, a small army of people got together and made something that is like an artistic achievement, like when Disney put Fantasia out.
You know, right? I never really thought about it that way, but that is kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, like they just were like, oh, no, you thought that was the best we can do? Stick around for 5 minutes, right? And every time they did something, it was so extra. It was so like, oh, my God, what are you people? I felt for them, probably they probably felt like the – like if what I'm playing is street ball on Black Panther's Quest.
Yeah.
They probably felt the Olympic level of, I can't believe we're getting away with this. I can't believe they're letting us do all this crap. Like, really? We can just
do
this?
And they did. Yeah. I mean, the comedy was...
Oh, my God.
The comedy was just so airtight.
Yeah.
In this movie.
It's a beautiful thing.
You know, it really surprised me before I saw it. I was like, you know, when they first announced that Miles Morales was getting his own movie, I was like, oh, you know I'm all for this. This is no way.
People were skeptical. Like, they were like, what are they doing?
Yeah, screw those people.
Me? Well, no, it was a lot of people.
Oh, no, I know it was. I know it was. But I was like, I always had this feeling like, if I like something, I can put money on it that is, I think you'll like it too.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's always been my thing. And I knew just from the get, and then when we saw the trailer, I was like, oh, yeah. That little teaser that they showed and him wearing the classic Jordans, and I was like, oh, my God, what are you doing?
Oh, dude, that first jump off the building?
Yes.
I was just like, okay, you got me. Oh, and they show that little chase through the street, that little tiny segment of this mm-hmm. chase through the street with a prowler on a motorcycle chasing him through New York. And I was just like, what is this movie going to be? Like, well, holy crap.
I mean, I love the way they handle the tease leading up to this because, first of all, I'm so happy that they didn't show that there was going to be more than one Spider-Man until later.
Yeah.
Because even at that point, I was like, all right, is this going to overshadow Miles? And then in watching it, I was like, they did this so perfectly and still gave everybody their time and still made them kind of the background, but not too background. But everybody felt important, but Miles was the main person.
Yep.
And
it was everything. It was everything.
And now
I hope Stan got to see a cut before he died.
I agree.
That's what I hope.
The celebration of the multicultural aspect, just the surroundings of the neighborhoods, his heritage, everything. I loved it.
But you know what also they didn't do, which I loved about this?
What's that?
They didn't go, hey, look at us being all diverse over here.
Absolutely. They didn't do any.
There was no moment of that.
Yes.
It was just, this is New York, y'all. Get used to it.
Yep.
I love that they didn't do subtitles on the Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't speak Spanish. So I don't know why I need a translation. I know what a mom says to a son when he's acting like an idiot. I'm pretty sure I got the gist on that one, you know. So,
but
it gave you a flavor.
Yeah, exactly.
But it gave you a flavor, right? Mm-hmm. It gave you the full flavor of we're dropping you into a world,
mm-hmm.
right? This is a world. This isn't just, hey, look at this fun thing we're doing. This is a world you're being dropped into.
Yeah.
And I heard they announced that they're going to do a spinoff with Gwen and the ladies. I'm like, bring it on.
I'm all for it.
If you do it like that, oh my God. Like, wow.
The art style, the writing, the Mahershala Ali, for God's sake, can do no wrong.
Oh, no, it's ridiculous. They just, They just dropped a mic. They just took a rocket into space dropped a mic.
First of all, I always liked the fact when I read the Ultimate Spider-Man series, like from Mark Bagley on to Sarah Pacelli, by the way, I love the fact that they paid homage to all these different Spider-Man artists.
Oh my God. How about the Bill Sienkiewicz version of the freaking Kingpin?
Yes.
What was that? Like, oh my God.
I saw a bit of Sarah Pacelli.
That's a whole show by itself.
I saw a little Sarah Pacelli. I saw a little Eric Larson. I saw a little Mark Bagley. Sure. I was like,
Yep.
I love that they paint.
And how about the Kirby sparkles?
The Kirby dots.
The Kirby dots.
Yes.
The Kirby dots.
The Kirby dots in the machine, teleporting machine.
Gorgeous.
Oh,
gorgeous,
it was awesome. Gorgeous. It was so much little insight for our Marvel fans. It was. I can't wait to just go on Blu-ray.
Yeah, dude. Hey, let me tell you. I already put in my iTunes pre-order. I literally came home and pre-ordered it on iTunes right away.
I'm not kidding. At all.
The day that shows up, it'll be on a loop.
And
like,
not only that,
oh my God.
Did you get the soundtrack?
Yes. Yeah. Dude, there's nothing wrong with this movie.
No.
It is literally a perfect movie.
I'm not joking.
There's
like, immediately,
nothing wrong with it.
All the songs that were played on there, and I was like, the song selection was awesome. And then the minute this movie was over, even to the very end credits, by the way, which was...
Oh, that was ridiculous. Right. Don't spoil it. Not everybody's seen it yet.
I know.
But man. This movie, everybody hasn't seen it.
But...
Do yourself a favor. Even if you don't think you like that stuff, go out and see that movie.
But once I finished, I immediately downloaded that soundtrack. And the soundtrack is the second best soundtrack, in my opinion, to Black Panther.
Holy crap. Like... Can you imagine? Think how this year started.
With Black Panther.
And think how it's closing out.
And
I
already thought about that. I was like, this 2018 needs to be remembered for the beginning.
Like, people better recognize what they got this year.
Absolutely.
Like, I remember there was a year they always talk about. It was the year Wrath of Khan came out.
Yeah.
And I think the same year, like Blade Runner and all these other shows, mm-hmm. these movies came out. Like The Thing. Like, I don't remember what the year is, but it was like that. Right. This is one of those years.
Right.
For that kind of material, everybody just was like, "Nope, we're bringing it. We're bringing everything. We're throwing everything out." So, speaking of which, Black Panther versus Thor, how'd that go over?
Oh,
how'd you like that?
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's. I got a feeling you guys left us so much chomping at the bits for what's possibly going to happen in January. First of all, by the way, you're not slick. You're not slick either. Because I hope you remember what I'm about to say, because you tweeted something a while back that you were finished the script and you put the word thwip. And I tweeted you back. I'm like, does that mean what I think it means? And you were like, I don't know what you're talking
about. I have no idea what you're talking about.
But now we do, because the trailer and the commercials are showing that Spider-Man is
appearing. Oh, they are? They put one out? I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah, it's been showing. Oh. Matter of fact, and during the last episode they air that, and it's been airing ever since on in commercials.
Oh, I hate everyone. I need to see that. But yes, okay. Well, if they're showing it, then yes, the secret is
it's
out.
It's on syndication.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, man. Dude, I told you, people don't get it. First, as much as we love the first half of the season,
yeah,
buckle up.
And the second season,
okay.
The second half is going to be what, January 20?
I think mid-January. I had heard the 6th, but it might be the 21st.
Actually, you
like,
know what?
I don't know.
You may be right. I think it is. I think it is the 6th, but it will be back in January. Let's just put it like
that. Yeah, for sure. For sure. But everything that you saw in the first half is just a setup for the second half.
Absolutely. Now like, I do have one more question for you. And of course, again, thank you again for being on here. And always awesome talking with you.
My pleasure. Plus, I like talking to people who actually know the material.
I do
like,
my best.
It's way harder when you have to like
explain
pass on what you have to tell them enough information in the interview for them to ask you questions.
Nah, I really like to shoot the shot and just have everybody have a relaxing, fun time when you talk on my show. So
yeah.
I'm going to do my homework, and I'm going to be invested in the homework that I do. And it's not even homework to me. So.
Well, it shows. It's a pleasure. I enjoy it.
I much appreciate it.
You saw the mood I was doing when we started and all the trouble we were having getting this thing all set up. I'm in a great mood now.
I'm very happy about that. Yeah. For anybody else, for any other guest that wants to be on this show and is listening right now.
Yeah, right.
We're talking about, you know, the artistry that was in the Spider-Verse. And this is going to be the stupidest last question in the world. Okay. Do you want to, I mean, you as a writer, I mean, we talked about the marriage between art and the art of writing.
Yeah.
Would you want to work on a project that would consist of something of that type of artistry or even like anime? Because I remember Marvel did an anime series of shows from Madhouse Animation Studios way back.
Yeah.
That were beautiful to look at. They were stunning, but the writing, in my opinion, the storytelling.
Yes, I would do that. The short answer to that is always yes. Mm-hmm. If someone said, frankly, after seeing Into the Spider-Verse, yeah. if someone said, you can stay in the business, but you can only make movies like that for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Nothing else, just stuff like this. I'd be like, cool, let's go.
Right.
You know? So, but I mean, come on, those guys, that was like watching the Sistine Chapel getting painted. Like they did everything every animator's always wanted to do.
Right.
And they did it at a level that it's just like, oh my God, please just stop. You're making me feel bad now. Like, wow. Like, but in a good way, right?
Absolutely.
Like, my partner and our highest compliment is that's what I meant to do.
Yeah.
Right. Like, oh damn, that's what I meant to do. Right. But you didn't mean to do that because who knew it was possible?
Right.
Right. So anytime artwork of any, and that's another thing too. People always talk smack about Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
How we can't do anything that's truly artistic. It's all just McDonald's food, right? Mm. We're just trying to put butts in the seats, right. Sell some popcorn and t-shirts and whatnot. And I'm like, really? Take any random 5 minutes of that movie and say that again.
Absolutely.
Right. Those are artists.
I really hope and cross my fingers and pray that movie wins the Golden Globe that it's been nominated for.
It needs to sweep. Like, it came out of nowhere and it needs to sweep.
It really did. I mean, it really, really did. And I was wondering, like, oh, wow, this is nominated for a Golden Globe and it hasn't even premiered out in theaters yet? What?
Well, that's scary, right? When universally everyone, critics and fans are like, what is this movie? Holy crap.
We're talking about, like, Black Panther also nominated as well, but nobody's really talking about this as an animated movie for Marvel as well. And this is actually going to be a historical thing for Marvel as well if they win.
Well, it's really a Sony movie, though, right?
It's
not a Marvel. It's not a Marvel Studios movie. Sony made this movie.
It's not a Marvel Studios movie, but it is a Marvel-esque.
Well, here's the thing, right? A lot of the people who've had Marvel properties mm-hmm. haven't done them well, right? Yeah. I'm not going to shit on a director or a writer. Right, but whatever happened at Sony since they had their big shakeup, basically, whatever deal they made with Marvel to put Peter Parker back in the MCU mm-hmm. Made somebody over there sit down in a boardroom somewhere and go, you know what, we got all these other characters we own, let's play, let's see what we can do. And that could have added up to nothing, but instead it added up to this.
Yeah.
So I will give Marvel some credit, but I got to give Sony the lion's share of the credit.
This is the best Spider-Man movie in years for Sony, bar none.
Oh, dear God, yes. I would say it's instantly now in the top three superhero movies ever made.
Arguably.
Like, and I would say, I don't even know. I would put that up against a live action show. Like, I just think it's one of those. It's like, it's Fantasia. It's as amazing as Fantasia must have been when it first came out. Right, like they were like, this is the state of play,
right.
Guys. I know you thought you were making animation. No, this is animation from now on. This is the bar.
Right.
You want to talk to me? You talk to this. So, I mean, those guys, they're gonna be riding that for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely.
They're gonna be riding this movie for the rest of their lives.
They deserve it because this is what we wanted to see from Sony for a long time.
Yeah. Now, can I get my X-Men movie like that? Can I get all my movies like that?
I tell you what, at least at best, this, and pun intended, this actually, Into the Spider-Verse literally washed this symbiotic taste out of my mouth.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I haven't seen that movie, so I can't comment.
I would highly recommend that you do not.
I got nothing against it. I just haven't had a chance.
Here's the way I put it. I don't say don't see it. I say if you're a fan of the Venom that we loved from the 90s,
yeah,
I would not recommend it. But if you're a casual fan, you will enjoy it for what it is.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I have no opinion one way or the other about Venom. So I literally haven't had a chance to see it.
You could probably look at it from a different perspective.
Let us reconvene at the end of the season.
Absolutely.
To discuss your thoughts on what we did. Because what we're about to do ain't nothing like what we just did.
Sounds like
a plan. I'm not kidding. I'm so not kidding.
Sounds like a plan. Jeff, thank you so much for being on the show again. It's always a pleasure. And again, please take the time and let everybody know where they can find you and follow you.
JeffreyThorne.com. That's basically got all my links on it. Spelled my weird way, G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y, Thorne, T-H-R-N-E, one word, .com. Anything you want to know about me, you can find there. It will link you to everything else.
Absolutely. And people,
easy.
And always keep checking up. And please check out Avengers Black Panther's Quest. It is a awesome, awesome TV series, Marvel Animation, and you know, Disney XD, and Jeff Warren and the whole entire crew. You guys did a tremendous first half of the season. I'm looking forward to it again, and I'll be looking forward to talking to you at the end.
Thanks, brother.
All right, man. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed this very special holiday edition of Talk Time Live Exclusive. On behalf of myself and the one and only Jeffrey Thorne, all I got to say is learn to let go, live life, and love all things anime, comics, movies, and games. This is ACMG Presents Talk Time Live. We are out of here. Take care, people. This episode of ACMG Presents Talk Time Live is brought to you in part by Viewfinder's Identity Search and Design. Your choice for web design, graphic design, and all multimedia development needs. Visit VFISAD.com and let us bring your vision to reality.